Hi, this is Charlene Hafer-Macko. I'm a neurologist at University of Maryland School of Medicine, and I run our Myasthenia Gravis Center at Maryland. And I'm here today with Brittany Folley and Mike Ersic, and we would like to talk about issues that pertain to young adults with myasthenia gravis. And I would like them to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Brittany Folley. I'm 24 years old. I live in southeastern Massachusetts, and I was diagnosed with myasthenia gravis in February of 2009.
Hi, I'm Mike Ersic, and I'm 29 years old, and I was diagnosed at 24 years of age back in 2007, and I'm an engineer, and I enjoy being an active myasthenic.
All right. So what I would like to do, the first question I'd like to ask of the two of you is, how does the diagnosis of myasthenia affect your self-esteem when you're young, single, while you're in school or just out of school, starting to establish yourself as a young professional in the working world?
I guess I can go ahead first here. In regards to the self-esteem, I think it's great that we have a femaleness and a male, because I think it can be broken down differently, especially from my end of things. When you're a male and diagnosed with something that makes you weak, it kind of knocks you down on the whole. It's very hard to display weakness when you're male. It's hard for anybody to display weakness, but especially for a male. So it's one of those things where you start bottling a lot of your emotions up inside and try not to really show them to people. So in essence, your self-esteem just continually goes down, 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 but you're not trying to look out for help. So that's one of the issues we have with self-esteem.
On the female aspect, I feel like my self-esteem was very much challenged at this point. It really challenged how I felt about myself and how I pictured myself, because, again, it's another grieving process. You're so used to how you are and how you do things, but then now you're adding on medications that affect, you know, weight gain and all those things. And as a woman and as a female, weight gain and all of those mood swings and everything really do play into how you're looked at and how you look at yourself. So when I was diagnosed, I was a senior in undergrad and leaving and starting my professional career. So it was very interesting of trying to understand and bridge that gap between how then do I go and talk to my future employees about my MG? Do I tell them that I have myasthenia gravis? Do I keep that for myself? Do I wait until I have an episode or any kind of showing symptoms to then talk to them? So it's very interesting to kind of feel out and try and work through. So from a woman's point of view, we're definitely more about showing our emotions and feelings, where I feel like on the other side, it's not that case.
You actually brought up an interesting work-related. So for you, what did you do for work?
I worked for a local counseling agency as a mentor for children who are diagnosed with any mental health issues. So it was very emotionally draining and physically draining job for me, which I'm still working. So I started working there in September of 2009, and when I was going through my training, I actually started having episodes of double vision, of the drooping eyelid, you know, things like that. So until I felt like it started to affect the way I was taking in information or trying to learn new things, I then decided to go to my supervisor and say, listen, this is what I have. This is what's bothering me. I'm still going to do my job to the fullest. It just might take me, you know, a little longer to, you know, get to my next appointment or to see the piece of paper in front of me for a minute.
And they were accommodating with you?
They were very accommodating. They were very open. They, too, had no idea what myasthenia gravis was, so I had to do a little bit of education around that. And they saw how comfortable I had become with my diagnosis, and I shared as much as I could with them about it. And that I also stated that it's still a work in progress for me. So once I get new information, they would be the ones to get the information as well.
And how do you get comfortable with your disease?
I think for me, personally, it was about being open with it, being able to understand that, yes, I'm going to have good days and I'm going to have bad days, and to be okay with the ups and downs. I was very open with communication with my neurologist. I was very open with communication with my family and my friends. It actually really did help to kind of weed out those people who would be there for you and those who wouldn't. So it really made me see who the people were worthwhile of my time were, and who those people who were just more, let's push to the side and, you know, let's not make as much time for them as well. So that was really helpful.
And how about you, Mike? How does the myasthenia affect job or?
Well, I was actually in graduate school, so it's a similar situation to Brittany. I was still in my collegiate years when I was diagnosed with myasthenia. And my real honest method that I dealt with it was I tried to hide it. I didn't want to have to tell anybody about it. Now, I told my graduate research professors about it, but that's pretty much it. It was wintertime when I was first diagnosed, and I still had the ocular symptoms. So I wore, if we were outside, I always wore sunglasses. It didn't matter if it was cloudy or sunny, I always had the sunglasses on. And since it was wintertime, I was always wearing winter hats, even indoors, that I pulled down really close to my eyes, so you really couldn't tell if I had any ptosis of the nature. So I tried to hide it as best as possible, because I'd rather not have to, at that point in time, tell everybody about it, because I was still insecure about telling people about it.
So that brings us to social life, and how do you sort of go out there with the myasthenia? So you didn't stay hiding forever, Mike.
No, not hiding forever. The social life. My main group of friends knew about it initially, my college buddies that I had roommates with and everything, but I still tried, even up to, even about 2 years ago, I still would refrain from telling people, except which leads us into another question, dating people you date. But in regards to if I didn't have to tell anybody, I didn't. I like to keep it private.
So how do you keep up with your buddies? Because fatigue is an element of myasthenia. And so, you know, if they say, Mike, come on, let's go do this, how do you sort of allocate your time?
Well, it's interesting, and it's all based on how myasthenic or myself is presenting themselves that day. But if typical guy stuff, go play basketball, go play football, go do something athletic. If I start jogging and then all of a sudden myasthenia would hit, I would just blame it on being way out of shape or something of the other nature. Now, it's grown into something different as I've become more accepting of the disease now. But I've also been lucky at the same time to be doing quite well with the myasthenia right now. So I believe it's always a continual battle on how much do you tell, who do you tell, and what do you tell.
I feel the same way, Mike. I feel like, especially when it comes to the social aspect of life, especially when you're in your early 20s, a lot of that is revolved around, you know, going out late nights and, you know, spontaneous nights out to dinner or to the bar or doing something. So I had to learn, and thankfully I too had very well-known college friends who helped me through the process and were very aware of everything and didn't really judge me for it, but I had to learn how to say no. I kind of had to learn how to then say no or modify what we were doing to kind of fit what was going on at the time. So if my friends decided they wanted to go out drinking to the bar, I would, you know, because of medications and things like that, I would then say, you know what, I'll just be the designated driver. You know, just kind of modifying things so I didn't miss out on the great memories that I could make with my friends, but I also didn't have to compromise myself and my well-being and my health as well. But the dating piece is very interesting too, because it goes back to what Mike was saying about, you know, when do you tell them, how much do you tell them, and what's the next plan? Yep. And I think that's the hardest piece.
So if you were to meet someone, you know, a young adult with myasthenia, what sort of, you know, how would you help coach them along, you know, if they asked you questions, how do you do this? You know, how do you pace yourself? How do you get through the day? What advice would you have for them?
One step at a time.
Agreed.
One step at a time with everything. If you try to do everything at once, myasthenia is overwhelming as it is, and you're going to find yourself lost. One step at a time with everything, with telling everybody, and even if to jumping back on telling people, I'll go a little bit into dating. I always would want to tell whoever I was dating at the time early on, because I believe everybody has the right to know that you're dating if there's something that's going to be a factor in the relationship. But I always look for signs on ways to tell people, such as if they have any friends that are in the health industry, or is somebody studying something health-related, and then somehow pull it out of them, or just wearing myasthenia apparel and then have them ask you about it. But that's pretty much how I go about that.
Yeah, I feel like, especially when it came to the dating aspect too, especially if I'm going to be talking to young girls, I feel like, you know what, MG is a part of who you are. So if that person can't understand or take into account that that is who you are, then they don't deserve to really be with you or even try and understand you. So I think that's definitely a big part of it. And it comes back to the whole going through the acceptance piece and being comfortable. But again, that takes, like Mike said, one day at a time, and you need really good support system. And I would love to be as a support for somebody else, because I know it would have made a difference if I had it.
And how about now that you've met other people with myasthenia, has that impacted your lives?
The whole not alone feeling, it completely went away for me. Even though when you first get in and you start talking to people, but it's not an interactive experience right there for you in the room. By going there and meeting a lot of people such as Brittany, the whole I'm not alone feeling completely went away.
So you felt alone when you were diagnosed with myasthenia?
Oh, completely, yes.
Yes, so did I. And I think Mike hit the nail on the head by saying, you know, getting there and actually seeing people face-to-face and meeting those who've done it before you or are going through it with you, it's very much a big sigh of relief, especially for someone young like us, and knowing that, you know, we can live long, fulfilling lives, but we don't have to feel alone or isolated because we just happen to have MG. So it was really nice to go there and make the connections and, like, crack jokes with Mike about things.
And that's exactly one thing that Brittany just nailed right there, and I was trying to say that you don't expect how much humor is going to come out of meeting other people with myasthenia, but when you're talking and you're sharing the exact same experience,
mm-hmm.
a lot of things, especially with the medications, especially with things you accidentally do because you have myasthenia, a lot of it becomes funny, and humor is the best drug to cure any problems. So that's a lovely side effect of going to the conferences and meeting people.
Yes, and I love the fact that I could, you know, make the connection with Mike and leave there knowing that, you know, I had made a lifelong friend, and know that, you know, if I did need support, you know, all I had to do was get on Facebook and send him a message and be like, listen, I'm struggling with this today, and this is an awful feeling, but know in the back of my head that Mike understands and gets it, and he knows what it's like to go through it. So he's going to support me and talk to me about, you know, have you talked to your neurologist? Have you requested getting your IVIG, like, sooner? Have you advocated for that? And are you, like, popping your medicine on every couple of hours? Whatever it might be. It was just really helpful to be in the atmosphere and be fully immersed with those people for that long. And just see, like, you're going and looking around the room and seeing everyone reach into their bags to grab their Mestinon or grab, you know, their morning medication or something. And you're just like, ah, finally, I'm not alone.
I agree 100%.
I have enjoyed talking with both of you this afternoon, and I really enjoy your positive outlook and how you deal with your myasthenia gravis. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Charlene.